God with you. I had always been taught to assume that if everything I did met the expectations of meeting people, then I was doing God's will. God was certainly with me. If I asked for something that God was going to give me anyway, why then He'd still give it to me. The power of prayer. But in my 20s, I'd come smack up against the possibility that sometimes what the church people expected and what God expected might clash. That meeting people might turn from me when God, quite distinct from them, was with me. So, how to know if you have God with you in how you're living and what you're doing? If I was having trouble achieving something and felt like I was being opposed in it, I had to decide whether I was being opposed by God or other things. I decided that if I was going to do something good, something in God's name which He'd like, which would honor or glorify Him, that I could always expect problems and opposition. Attacks, even. No good deed went unchallenged, so the question was whether it was God or something else providing the opposition. If I was doing something genuinely Jesus-like and God-serving, I could expect, of course, problems with those of Pharisee bent. That's true for anyone. I started to find myself falling into certain jobs. I wasn't supposed to be a useful, helpful person to others as far as my meeting judge matters, yet more and more, various thinking, hurting, and wounded people started seeking me out. Well-intentioned meeting people warned them off, of course. The reality was, though, that the people who held positions which identified them as those whose job it was to help hurting people often weren't much use at all. So, to do this job, I had to get very used to spiteful nastiness about those troubled people confiding in me. And not all opposition, I'd been raised to believe, is human. I believe there are things that need to keep Christians all bound up and messed around. I think if God uses you to provide a bit of comfort or insight, you're messing with some things. But I decided back in the day that if God wants something good to happen, He's most likely going to get His way. He might wait until he can find someone who's really into achieving it. God insists upon working on earth through human beings in almost everything, I believe, as he gave this earth to us and doesn't snatch it back like a dad taking back birthday presents. But likely, he's going to get the thing he wants eventually. So I decided that if I thought something good should be done, and things started to look problematic and storm clouds started to gather, that there were two obvious possibilities. Number one, either it was because I was mistaken and my course of action wasn't good at all, and God wasn't interested and wasn't with me in it, and it would never succeed. Or the opposite was going on, that I was rocking the boat by starting to achieve something good, that I was being opposed by forces evil and bureaucratically mundane, forces God would hopefully not allow to thwart me, so I should keep going. I saw the thing as akin to a game of chicken. If you don't flinch, you'll find out if the thing can be done. Because fear is a great way of manipulating human beings, fear and pride, together an unbeatable combo. And I was raised to both. Sometimes we encounter pride disguised as shame, which is nothing more than pride disappointed. Wrestling with fear and doubt. Fear and doubt have always been real problems in my society, my family, and my church culture. Fear can rob you of a lot of things in life. One thing I do now sometimes is ask myself, are you dreading what will happen next, when there's no real reason to feel you even know it will be something bad? Are you being blinded and led by fear? Are you suffering from dread even though nothing bad has happened and nothing bad may ever happen? Because I constantly find myself doing that. Expecting the worst. There aren't too many people, towns, countries, or centuries that have ever been safer either, so it's dumb. So as an exercise, I make myself imagine a couple of other non-horrifying ways that things might very well go today. I tend to imagine in detail all kinds of crap that may go wrong, so I just put my imagination to work, conjuring happy scenarios to stack right beside the doom and gloom ones. What I find is that fearing and dreading life really properly takes all of your brain cycles. So that kind of goes away if it has to share headspace with pleasant imaginings. Dump in any happy imagined scenarios, and it really takes the wind out of the sails of the dread. When I first started to try to achieve good instead of just living a sin management week in which I didn't break rules, I would naturally expect things to all go wrong, for everything to look quite impossible and absolutely doomed. This always happened, too. But then I'd just keep trying to see if all the gloom and doom melted away like so much parlor trickery and empty posturing and threats, to see if God might step up and honor my clumsy attempts to honor him and live life well, to see if I could learn to respond appropriately to things the only proper response to which is joy. I am pleased to report this has worked pretty well. But my natural tendency is to second-guess myself, to assume that I'm always wrong somehow. My natural tendency is to be afraid to imagine improvement or growth or blessing of any kind. Whenever I imagined anything good, if my father caught wind of it, he always leaped in to let me down easy about how life generally turns out, to point out the danger and folly he felt was inherent in hoping, to convince me to stop hoping, dreaming, planning, and trying anything much, to protect me from disappointment. I'm trying to grow beyond that a bit. Give good a chance. Let hope have her wicked way with me. Let joy and warmth flow out of me as a natural response before they rot from being left on the shelf too long. But it is also very natural for me to be dissatisfied with fake stuff, with pretending that something is good or working or helpful or already achieved, when actually it's very clearly crap. Admiring fake virtue is, I think, a great way to make sure there's no real virtue to be had. So I always want real worth. I look for workability rather than just wall-mounted, web-posted, inspiring claims and shameless, unearned self-congratulation, and I generally want to help people. I look for stuff that's messed up, and I try to help. I want everything to be better than it is. I want people and things to have to be as advertised. I want me, and I want the people I know, to be better, and to be getting better all the time. I want to be able to smell growth in the air around me. Too much of the world stinks of dust, death, diesel fumes, and decay. I am deeply unsettled by people, relationships, and situations where death, rot, lies, exploitation, corruption, and chaos seem to win out. Because I need to see God here. I need him to care and be doing something. I think this is, in a small way, a triumph over my Laodicean upbringing when we already felt we had everything God wanted to give, where there was no expectation that there was anything we still needed to get. Anything more real, heartfelt, helpful, deep, workable, or good than what we already had. Which was a recipe for real despair in my case. So this is better. Because now I go to God and look for him to get involved, to bless things and help because of his grace. Simply because he wants to. I don't wait until I think I deserve his involvement. I'd be waiting forever. The big impediment to that, of course, is a faltering ability to believe in a God who likes me. In my head, I can believe that God designed people and that we are all fearfully and wonderfully made, and that even I have been made with a certain virtue or work to God built right into me and being developed throughout the year. I can mentally assent to that idea, but in the course of a week, I have very little success in feeling like God likes me or that I am doing anything good that he likes very much at all. Now, part of this, I'm going to have to go ahead and blame on my past baggage. It takes a fairly strong personality to grow up being treated as weird, as not quite right, as not quite normal, as certainly problematic and definitely not useful, and somehow turn around and say, I was more or less what God made me to be, and was sometimes part of a solution to problems and was useful to him. I certainly can't feel like that most of the time. Culture is powerful. Formative years form you. If you have kids, remember that you can make them feel like they are a problem rather than being people who sometimes help solve problems. They need to feel like they could be a solution, at least sometimes. If you want to be a solution, of course, and no one wants to talk about there even being a problem, you are a problem to them acting that way. You need to be able to stand up and make a difference anyway. It's awkward. Everyone stands around in tuxedos drinking champagne, celebrating the fact that the holy washing machine works, not letting anyone actually put clothes into it, as that would be irreverent to the holy machine, and you show up in coveralls with a tool belt, some rubber hoses, and a hose clamp. And you start mopping away the water that's leaking out from under said machine and getting ready to have a look behind it, like there might be something to fix. You are especially a problem if one of the men drinking self-congratulatory victory champagne in his tuxedo is the duly elected executive officer in charge of machine maintenance. Watch out for him. He'll take you to the cleaners before you know it. You're a threat. Why did I think of a holy washing machine? I guess I was thinking of this silly little song I wrote when I'd been kicked out of my assembly for thinking, growing, and trying to help and talk to people, even if they'd been labeled problematic and to be avoided. It's silly, but here it is.
I'm a red sweater. What could be better than to stay all nice and clean? Got this idea, it just suits me. I never leave the washing machine. Blood and sweat, grass stains, you bet, and grease and dirt and food. Never seen the world firsthand, but I'm told that it's very rude. Another clothes offend my nose in my mate's hag so bright. I scream and shout, I kick them out, which of course is only right. Yeah, I'll be faded and tattered. No, one day too holy to mend up or don. But when I'm tagged and bagged, I won't be a filthy rag, just a faded twist of pinkish yarn. I'm a red sweater. Could be better than to stay all nice and clean. I've got this idea, it just suits me. I never leave the washing machine. The washing machine.
I'm talking about following God rather than worshiping the church. You may see the church ostracizing, alienating, or otherwise hurting someone for being confused, or weak, or hurt, for not knowing all the stuff we're required to be certain of, for seeking, for having doubt, for going through a rough patch. You may see them punishing this with shame, blaming the victim, walking by on the other side of that Jericho road. I have often seen this. Churches really seem to hate dissatisfied customers and feel the need of getting rid of them. They're bad for business. The longer you attend, and the church answers still aren't fixing you, the more they seem to want you to leave. Ask the guy sitting in the wheelchair year in, year out, at a church that prides itself on miraculous faith healing. If you reach out to help someone the church is in the process of spitting out, often you get threatened. You are told that the safe thing to do when someone's so clearly ailing is to draw away so you don't get what they've got. If they actually die, spiritually, that will be that. And if they get better, then maybe they can come back in with the rest of us. This is how we keep the church healthy, spiritually speaking. It's Christ's way. This nonsense is what you're told if you have anything like my life experience. Don't help the hurting people, the confused people, the lost people. They are the problem. Why can't they just follow Jesus and be a happy, helpful part of this church? This is how you're expected to view things and how you're being asked to behave. Not like Jesus who touched lepers. If he were here today, it would be people with AIDS. So if you decide to follow through on the urge to bring a hurting person chicken soup, spiritually speaking, or literally, you may well open yourself to attacks from your culture. But is it worth doing? I think so. I even think so, despite the fact that the person you try to help might well backstab you to get church brownie points with the people who are disapproving of the both of you. Backstabbing problem people wins you a lot of support, shows you're with the program. I've had it done to me, for sure, when trying to help hurting people who are seeking a way to climb back on the heap and recommence the piety contest. But I still think you should try to help, even if you're not a pastor whose paid job it is to fix things. I even think so, despite the fact that I was kicked out and shunned for life by my church culture, partly because of that very situation happening. Ultimately, though, my getting kicked out feels like Joseph being sold into slavery to Egyptians. He goes from being a shepherd boy loved by his father but despised by his brothers to being second in command and trusted spiritual advisor to the Pharaoh of Egypt, with his brothers showing considerably more respect for him than formerly. For my part, I went from being a brethren lamb living in absolute terror that I'd be kicked out if I ever said or did, wrote or wore a wrong thing ever, yet needing to do it anyway, to eventually getting kicked out for writing the wrong thing and suddenly finding that I was free, much more free than I wanted to be, free to serve God, free to write and say whatever I feel will honor God or make people think and feel things about him. And it feels like he's into this in a way he was never, ever into that other life path. God doesn't appear to be into bondage. I no longer live a life of obeying God's rules, so he has to bless me, with my birth culture informing me as to all of those rules I do not need to obey per se, but certainly should not break either, of course. Not if I love Jesus. Love makes you please someone. Rules make you resent someone. Ask a wife who loves her husband. Carol says, when she loves her husband, she wants to do stuff he wants, and it doesn't feel like obedience at all. She does stuff he'll like, even if he doesn't know in advance he's going to like it or that it's even happening. When he's a jerk, he could try to order her to do things he'd like. Now I try to grasp the idea that God made me on purpose, is no fool, gets use of me, and likes me, will work things out with me when I screw up and still be glorified. He wants to use me. I no longer merely build my whole week around a church that keeps watch to make sure I'm sacrificing all opportunities for pleasure. There's more to my week than sin management. And most people don't need to leave or get kicked out of a church to live like this. If, unlike me, you are accepted by a church which doesn't insist upon taking charge and controlling most of your time and what you think, say, wear, write, and do, then go for it. Enjoy that acceptance. If they will let you do good things, even if you aren't in Africa, instead of merely claiming to be a group which is good and achieves good things, I think you should keep doing that. Why not? I do think you should be very careful to never substitute any church for God, though. That line between, I worship God in my church, to, I worship my church, which is my God, needs to be very clear.